Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 16th of January, Anno Domini 2010, and you, you lucky people. You're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And we're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff you can use. It's 5 minutes after the hour, so here we go, rushing headlong into this next
second
hour
show
stuff.
Of the new year.
Second show of the new year. How cool is that?
Unbelievable.
All right, we'll start with this news item. In a stunning about-face, Google has announced that it would no longer censor search results in China, and if the Chinese government balks, Google says it may take its servers and go home. The change in Google's policy toward doing business in China came after Google discovered that it and other companies were the victims of a highly sophisticated and targeted attack aimed at gathering information about human rights activists. It is not clear whether the Chinese government was behind the attacks, which Google said were directed against other U.S. companies. Google released a lengthy blog post Tuesday afternoon, authored by David Drummond, Senior Vice President of Corporate Development and Chief Legal Officer, discussing the decision to review its policy toward China. These attacks and the surveillance they have uncovered, combined with the attempts over the past year to further limit free speech on the web, have led us to conclude that we should review the feasibility of our business operations in China. We have decided we are no longer willing to continue censoring our results on Google.cn, and so over the next few weeks we will be discussing with the Chinese government the basis on which we would operate an unfiltered search engine within the law, if at all. We recognize that this may well mean having to shut down Google.cn and potentially our offices in China. Google has always been a company with a moral pulse, one that in its early days attracted a certain sort of idealistic engineer who truly believed the world could be made better by a responsible corporation that efficiently spread information and technology around the world. Yet Google is also one of America's largest and richest public companies and obsessed with growing even larger, as are they all. The collision of these two forces led Google into what company founders may eventually come to consider it as its worst decision, to self-censor search results in China for almost 4 years in hopes of improving overall access to information, which, of course, leads us to our poll of the week at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. The question is Google right in no longer censoring Chinese search results? The choices are absolutely, freedom is more important than a country's sovereign laws. No way, if you're going to do business in a country, you should follow that country's laws. And I have no intention of spending time to form an opinion on this. So far, we have 47 people, most of whom have been honest enough to say they have no intention of spending time to form an opinion on this. Of course, we know that the simple act of clicking a little button is not enough for you. So you can also go, after you have voted, you can look at the little yellow box underneath, click on the link that says, give us your opinion. It takes you to my website, asknick.com.
That's asknick.com.
And you can enter your opinion there. You can check out what I do there. I put out a newsletter. I have forums there, and you can even search the newsletter for all the tips and tricks and rants and raves and questions and answers and everything else that I do out there. At $15 a year, I think it's cheap at half the price. And then come on back to the Soundbites website and join us as we do a whole lot more stuff. So our question to you is, what do you think? Should Google censor searches or not? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 585-966-5299. Or, of course, if you're outside that 585 area code, you can call us toll-free at 1-800-790-0415, just like Valena did, who is calling us all the way from exotic Virginia. How are you, Valena?
I'm fine, thanks. How are you guys?
Perfect.
Except I'm sitting in Rochester.
Are you? How exciting.
I wanted to ask you the question last night on Second Life, but when I was sitting in Dulles, but they got us to our plane early, so I decided to call instead.
Sure. We're glad you did.
Glad to have you on.
I have two quick questions, and they probably have easy answers. But On my netbook, whenever I log in for the first time, it always tells me that I have updates, which happens to be Internet Explorer, which I don't like to use because I like to use Firefox. But as it's trying to do the update, it says that it's checking for malware, and then it gets hung up. It never goes past that point. Is it something that I have downloaded on my computer that won't let it go through?
I could be... There, Microsoft had one of the updates was a malware finder, you know, to find stuff in that, and that might have messed things up. But if it's getting hung up and trying to do the updates, you can go into the control panel and under the security settings, turn that off and just go in when you want to check for updates, go in and check for it.
Oh, great. But if I try to update it, will it still do that checking for the malware things?
Yeah,
I suspect it will, and that's an interesting problem. What other antivirus and anti-spyware stuff are you running?
I'm running whatever the Security Tango is, of course, because
you know what you might. Yeah, you know what you might try, Valena? You might try turning that stuff off before you do the update. It may be hanging up on whatever your, you know, the Avast or the firewall or whatever it is. For heaven's sake. Don't leave it off for long.
No, I wouldn't do that.
But turn it off to do the actual update and then turn it right back on again, see if that works.
Well, Microsoft doesn't like to play with other programs because
exactly.
They assume that, oh, you're only going to use their spyware program like the Defender program and all that type of stuff, which, oh, in polite terms, is a junk.
Right.
Yep.
Which is why I don't even like to use Internet Explorer.
Exactly.
And second question is, when I am in Firefox, every time I open Firefox, and I don't know if this is because I'm on a little netbook, I can't see the navigation bar. So every single time I have to go into Tools and view the navigation bars, or go into View and click on the navigation bar. Did I do something, or did I add a Firefox add-in or something that would have made it so that the toolbar doesn't show?
Well, you can turn off the toolbar. And it may be that that's how you've got it set, but why it won't let you...
I'm wondering if she turns it on. You know, most folks have the habit of just going up into the upper right-hand corner and clicking X to get out. Once you've got it the way you want and to the size of the screen you want, what you do is you go over to File, and under File, say Exit. It remembers those settings and the way you had Firefox, as opposed to, you know...
Right.
Quick getting out, you could just go up to the upper right-hand corner and click X and get out.
So if I do the X at one time and it saves it, then if I would do the X the following times, would it save it also?
It should. Once you've saved it should be saved. However, I'm also wondering, when you say you have to go make the menus appear, how do you do that?
I go to View. Toolbars, and then I click
The toolbars,
on the one
not
I
the menus.
See.
Right. Because
I don't... have a, you know, I only have the navigation bar that I want to see because it's such a small screen. You know, I don't want to have like all the,
right.
the other ones showing.
Right. I
should tell you that once upon a time, back in a little while ago, I had a complete meltdown with my netbook and it just completely went wacko and everything screwed up and it wouldn't even boot up. So I had to like reprogram it, redo it, and I don't know, since then it's been a little wonky.
I tell you what, if you would email me, dave@nwritepc.com, and just mention in there that we talked. I got a couple other ideas, but we'll do this on the side.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're quite welcome, and hey, enjoy your stay here in Rochester, but you got to do us one favor when you go back to Virginia.
Yes.
Is you got to start telling the friends down there to start listening to Sound Bites.
In fact, I subscribe through iTunes so I can listen to you guys on whenever I want to, too.
Sweet.
Very nice.
Cool. Well, thank you very much.
You guys have a great day.
You too.
You too.
Bye.
Thanks. That's our friend Valena. She's one of our friends in Second Life. Valena Shepherd, I believe, is her last name. It's nice to actually hear the voices of some of the people we type to in Second Life.
Yeah, because quite often, you know, we're just sitting there. We do, the three of us do all the talking, and the folks just sit there and type their question. A little less confusing. We should explain it to folks.
Yeah, we do. Second Life is an online virtual world kind of thing, and We're there every Friday night from 9 to 10:30-ish on Fridays. That's Eastern Standard Time, of course. So a lot of people come and join us. But one of the things that we try to do is to maintain the speed of the area that we're in, the sim, as they call it. And one of the ways that we do that is by making sure there aren't a lot of very flashy things going on the sim. But another way we do that is to ask people not to talk, because that seems to be that seems to make it run a little faster. So they type the questions and we answer back. When you get 40, 50 people talking at once, not only does it slow the sim down, but it also makes it a little difficult for us to understand the questions, and people try to jump in on top of each other. But if they type in their questions, it seems to come out much easier.
Yeah, it's just another way that if folks want to, and this is gaining popularity, well, like Valena there, down in Virginia. I mean, we get folks from literally all over the U.S. and even some folks from England. I mean, they've been all over because we advertise that, you know, we're there, every Friday night taking your computer questions, just like you folks can do here every week. Listening to us on Soundbites on Jazz, member supported Jazz 90.1.
That's exactly right. And we do this every week, whether we want to. Rain or shine. And it's beautiful out here in Rochester right now. For those of you who don't know,
wait a minute. You notice how we told folks last night that a certain individual is going to be here?
Yeah.
And he comes in. What for?
Donuts. Rob Linton was here. He came in for the donuts, and then he left. We don't know where he is at the moment. He's gone off into the ether somewhere, but he did come and have a donut, and that's, I guess, the whole point right there. He came in and had his donut, so that was nice. Yeah.
And it is becoming a nice day again. You can almost see the dead grass in patches under the snow.
But you know, for those of you who are new to Rochester, this is, don't get excited, this is what we call the January thaw. And what that means is we will be back to the lousy weather come another week or two, and then certainly into February. You may think that in other parts of the company, November, December, or winter, but here it's February. There's no question. February, March, sometimes into April, every once in a while into May. There have been those years when it snowed on Easter. So don't get all excited about the lack of snow.
I can remember snow in June.
Yeah.
You're old.
We've had snow in every
riding
month of
your
the
mastodon
year.
Around. Yeah,
no,
we have.
Literally, it was, I believe, what was it, 4 years ago. I happened to be, it was the first week in June. We were up to Americade, which is up by Lake George. And we happened to take a ride on up to the Olympics, where the Olympics and all that were held.
Mm-hmm.
On our way up there, I noticed, boy, it's getting colder. It's getting colder. And what I mean by colder, we started out early morning, and it's like in the 50s.
Yeah.
By the time we got on up to Lake Placid, it was down into the 30s. We come over this one hill on the bike, down to drive into Lake Placid. I'm seeing snow on the mountain.
Yeah.
We stayed long enough to thaw out and got the heck out of Dodge there because it was too darn cold, and I wasn't dressed for it.
Yeah, you really don't want to be. Oh, man, I'll tell you what. One time I was doing dinner theater in St. Louis. We closed that show, and they wanted me to open a show a couple of days later up in Detroit, to come into a show up in Detroit. So I figured I'll make the drive in 18 hours. I didn't sleep in those days. I was young and stupid. So I packed up my car. It was like 110 degrees in St. Louis. I mean, it was ludicrously hot. And, of course, we're downwind from the Budweiser brewery. So it was like living inside an old sock. So I get in my car. 18 hours later, I hit Detroit. It's a blizzard. The snow is up above the door, the door sill of my car, and I'm in shorts and sandals and a T-shirt. Because I hadn't stopped at all.
Yeah, one job I had in a previous life, I did a lot of traveling. And one winter, we had to go to Florida for a job. And so I leave Rochester all bundled up, had a heavy overcoat on and gloves and boots and the whole bit. And we did a job in Miami for a week. And then when we were flying back home, I packed all my coat and everything.
Yeah.
I'm in Miami.
Sure.
We get to Rochester in the middle of a blizzard. It was during the airport reconstruction, so plane parked on the tarmac. We had a portable ladder, and we had to walk across the tarmac into the terminal. And you know, I've got my short sleeve shirts on and carrying all my luggage because I just came from Miami, like everyone else on the plane.
Exactly. So I run into the hotel. I didn't even go to the house because it was farther up to the house. So I went to the hotel that we were working with. Now I knew all these people because I had been I had done a show there before, I come running in my shorts and my sandals in the middle of this blizzard and go, "Give me a room, I'm freezing." They laughed. They thought it was a joke. All right, we're going to take a break. We have somebody on the line. We have Bodan on the line. And I'm sure he's waiting there very patiently because he's a nice guy. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and each and every one of you on the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
America's longest-running computer show. Sound bites, the answer to your computer questions on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Jazz 90.1 is supported in part by our members and by Havana Mo's, located at 125 East Avenue in the East End. One of the only legal smoking bars in the city, Havana Mo's features the East End Jazz Boys live every Saturday night from 9:30 to 2 a.m. For more information, you can call 325-1030.
Jazz 90.1 apparel is available online. Whether it's a long or short sleeve t-shirt, half zip fleece, hooded sweatshirt, or baseball cap that you're looking for, you'll find it at the Jazz 90.1 online store at jazz901.org.
Hey, this is Derek Lucas, host of The Spectrum. Join me every Sunday night from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And Rob Linton's not going to mention his name. He was walking up to the mic, but he's not going to say his name.
Somebody turned up Nick's headset.
And I'm Rob Linton. And I came in more for more than donuts.
Really?
I came in for the good company that you offer.
Thank you so much. You came in, you ate a donut, and you left. That's all we know. Those are the facts.
The donuts were good, though.
The donuts were good.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to when you say, Dave?
Next week.
2 weeks. I'm going to stop in 2 weeks and act like I'm doing something, but really I'm going to be here for the donuts.
For the donuts. Yeah, there's no question. That's what we're here for.
That was the best part of the weekend back when we were at the other place was just the donuts. I always look forward to the donuts.
Sure.
Didn't have to eat breakfast that morning. It was a beautiful
because we had donuts.
That's right.
We've even got Nolan in now. Nolan just wandered in. We don't even know who he is, why he's here. He just wandered in. Apparently the word is getting out that the donuts are here.
And he crawled under the table and he's fiddling with knobs.
Whatever works for all of you guys.
Well, anybody who's watching the webcam, actually, there was a priceless shot yesterday. It's too bad we didn't have the webcam.
We're on camera, too.
Yep. We have Nolan and I were both under the counter here putzing with wires. So you could see us both, like, our rear ends together.
Very nice.
My afternoon DJ took a picture, and he said that was going to be priceless stuff. So you can see us both, like, crouched underneath the counter. But So, that's where we are. But anyway, I'll let you guys get back to computer questions.
Why not?
Well, we continue to make you sound even better than you sound in person.
And I cannot believe that, but I believe it of you guys. Look, Nolan at least looks like he knows what he's doing. So that's important. We're going to go to the phones now, quickly. Except Dave's pointing out something on the thing. Okay. We're going to go to the phones now. Our next caller is Bodan. Where are you calling from, Bodan?
Sunny Rochester, New York, on a Saturday afternoon.
You would certainly think I would remember that, but apparently I don't. And how are you?
I'm fine. Happy New Year, since this is my first phone call to you gentlemen in the 2010 year.
Yes, it is.
Gentlemen, I have a question in regards to Adobe Reader. This morning, it took an automatic update, which has done in the past. But I have two questions. Currently, the version is 8.2.0. What's interesting that at work, we're running Adobe Reader version 9. How come Adobe isn't upgrading me to version 9 and still keeps on updating to my version 8 reader? And the other thing that I noticed also is, and I do check, because I've noticed this before when I've gotten updates for that program or other programs, is the fact that in my MS config, all of a sudden, two aspects of the Adobe Reader program wanted to start up, you know, when the computer started up. And then those two components were called Adobe ARM, ARM, and also Reader underscore SL. So the two-part question, why hasn't my Adobe 8 version upgraded to 9, which is what we're running at work, and why does Adobe want to turn this off on when my computer comes on?
That's
Yeah, wait, Bodan, I just have to remark on the fact that both Dave and Steve started talking. Neither one of them had their mics on, so they both got, well, and then it was like the June Taylor mic users. They, well, and then they both reached and hit their buttons. It was very coordinated.
One of the annoying things that Adobe does, and a lot of companies do this too, they are upgrading your 8. It's your decision to upgrade to 9, and now 10 is the current version. No, Acrobat Reader 10 is still in beta. But so they're still upgrading your 8 because you haven't told it you wanted 9 because you haven't gone to the 9 yourself. And it's really annoying when they don't tell you there's a new major version available for whatever your software is.
Is there an advantage to going to version 9, and how do I do that? Do I first have to uninstall version 8 and then download version 9?
No, you can put 8 right over 9.
Well, most
of the, 9 right over 8.
With Adobe Reader, often you can't. Well, you can. You'll install 9, and then you'll have 8 and 9 loaded. So Adobe Reader is one of the annoying ones also that often doesn't delete the old version for you. You need to delete it yourself. Mm-hmm. I've run across computers that have 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9 on it because they update to the new version and assume it deletes the old one, and it never does.
Yeah, I know it's also in my MS Config startup. I still have something there for an Adobe version 7 reader.
Yeah, you can take that out. Okay. In addition,
how would I take that out, Nick?
Where is it now? In which part?
Well, I just see it as startup. It is unchecked, but it says Adobe Acrobat 7 Reader.
Well, if you can see the path, if you can right click and look at properties and see the path, then you should be able to find it somewhere in your system and just get rid of it.
Okay.
But if it's unchecked, it's not running anyway, so that's not a big deal. Adobe SL, that's the student licensing version. Were you a student recently or ever?
No.
There's also a confusing difference between the Adobe Acrobat Reader and Adobe Acrobat, which are completely separate programs. Adobe Acrobat's the commercial program.
Adobe Reader 8.
Yeah. So at some point, the Acrobat Reader changed its name to Reader to try to lessen that confusion between Acrobat and Acrobat Reader. As Acrobat is their professional program that you pay for, and Acrobat Reader is the free program that just reads PDF files.
Mm-hmm. But why did those two components want to start up at the boot up of my computer? I did uncheck it right now, but I don't think I need to have that program running at startup.
Well, they assume that you're going to use it enough so that they do a preload. A lot of programs will do that. They'll preload themselves into memory so when you launch it, it launches faster.
I understand. Yeah.
And it's annoying to some people. And if you don't have many system resources to begin with, it can make your computer a lot slower.
All right. And in your opinion, should I uninstall Reader 8 and go to download version 9?
Yes.
You might. And
you want to be on the newest version always.
And use Revo.
Revo
on my...
Yeah. Another annoyance that Adobe does is they don't update their downloader to the current version. So you may download 9.0. And then you immediately have to run all the updates to get the patches to get the current version, which is 9.3-something, because there are significant flaws in the early versions of the Adobe Reader that they have since fixed without changing their standalone downloader, which is very annoying.
Understand. Hey, one other question, if you guys don't have anybody right away to. I also have on my computer the Logitech webcam. And within the last couple of weeks, it also took an automatic update. But what I noticed is this, and this may concern me a little bit, the icon on the desktop changed. Before, it was like that circular ball that Logitech uses for its icon on the desktop. Now, it was replaced with what I would call just a generic Windows rectangle box with a blue stripe on top, and there's a little arrow. It still opens up the camera functions, but why would the icon on the desktop change?
Sometimes with a newer version, they'll add a different icon. You can go in on some of them, right-click on it, and you can change it back to the icon. They give you a few icons.
Does the program work?
Yes.
Then it's probably just a glitch in the download itself.
Okay.
You know, I don't necessarily know that that's anything to worry about.
All righty. I was just wondering from your experience. I thought maybe somebody was trying to hack into my computer and access the webcam program or something to that effect.
No, it's pretty unlikely. If it happened right at login and you got that, at upgrade.
Mm-hmm. That's what I noticed it within the last couple of weeks, and I remember there was an update for the Logicam software program.
Refreshing the desktop, hitting F5 on the desktop may load that icon back again. Theoretically.
F5?
Yeah, F5 refreshes the window you're in. Theoretically, when you restart the machine, it should refresh itself and bring the right icon back.
And I hit a F5 a few times now. It's still the it's the what I call the generic square, rectangular box.
Excuse me. You can always do a properties on that icon and change the icon back to what you want it to be.
Right.
Or actually, you can change it to something it isn't. That's a cute prank.
Prank.
I know. But right now, when I want to change icon, it says Windows cannot find the file. System root installer, and it's got a bunch of stuff. And then I want to click OK. Then all of a sudden, the little box comes up with different icons that I can change to if I wanted to.
So that may be it's a broken shortcut.
If you double-click on it, does it open the product?
Yes, it does.
So it's not a broken shortcut. It's a half-broken shortcut.
What about uninstalling that program and reinstalling it?
Can't hurt to try.
Or what he can do is just delete that icon. You go into go to Programs, go into that folder where the icon actually is, right-click on it, go to Send To, and you can say Send To Desktop Shortcut.
Well, let me see. I'm going to do it right now. Can you give me?
No, we really don't.
Can't really walk you through it.
All right.
Well, yeah, you're basically deleting the shortcut on the desktop and making a new one from the program folder. So if you go into program files, you can find the actual application with a new shortcut on the desktop.
And the other thing is, do you have the Creative Suite
for
Adobe?
Adobe, no.
Man, that's the only other place I know that Adobe SL comes from.
Let's put it this way: I don't believe so.
Well, you'd know it because you paid for it.
Yeah. Actually, I'm looking at programs, and the only thing that I have that come up under programs is Adobe Reader 8.
Yep. So that should only be it.
I honestly don't know. It's either the student licensing or one of the files inside CS4, and I don't know where else you would get it. I'm sorry.
Yeah. All right, guys. Huh. Thank you very much.
Yep, sorry.
Bye-bye.
Okay, that's a little weird. That is a little weird to me because I cannot imagine where else that would come from.
Yeah, and all the searches and Adobe says it's part of their student licensing software.
Right. So I'm not sure how that happened. It may be that once long and long ago.
Or site licensing software, maybe.
Could be site licensing. Could certainly be site licensing as well. I just don't know. Yeah.
Adobe is one of those weird companies that they make a lot of stuff called Adobe.
Yeah, exactly.
You hear that a lot. You know, you ask people what word processor they're using, and they say Microsoft. What do you have? It's Microsoft. Microsoft what? You know, they make a lot of programs.
Yeah, right, exactly.
You're hearing the same thing now with Adobe software. I've got Adobe. Adobe what? You know?
Yep. All right, our next caller is Tom. Where are you calling from, Tom? Tom's not calling from anywhere.
Push a different button.
Tom thinks he's still there, or else he's calling back. Tom's not there.
That's not quite the right busy signal, though. Maybe it's something in the phone system.
That's very weird. All right, well, we'll figure it out in a minute. Dave is taking another phone call even as we speak. This is one of those things that Dave is not only the board op and somebody who talks on the air, but he's also the guy who answers the phone, so sometimes we have to wait a little bit before we can get to him, and our next caller is Phil. Phil seems to be calling from somewhere deep in the wilds of New Jersey. Phil, are you there?
This is Michelle.
Hi, Michelle.
Not quite Phil.
Okay, where are you calling from, Michelle?
Livingston, New Jersey.
Okay, excellent. How are things in Livingston?
Not too bad today, actually. Pretty mild for this time of year. Snow is melting.
Sure, that won't last. You know it won't.
What's the joke about Jersey? You know, what exit?
Yeah, what exit do you live off of?
off of 280, 5A.
There you go, off 280. listen, I have to ask, is it Michelle with one or two L's?
It's two L's.
There you go. And what's your question?
All right, I've noticed that Adobe and Windows 7 seem to be having a battle. And I don't know who's going to win, but it seems that when I bring up Adobe, either Acrobat or Reader, almost immediately Windows 7 tries to shut down and reopen its window. I mean, Windows, what do I want to say? I mean, Windows 7, right.
Right.
I mean, Internet Explorer is what I meant to say. It's Internet Explorer 8 under Windows 7.
Okay, and so whenever you bring up either Acrobat or Reader, the full Acrobat program or the Reader, IE tries to, Internet Explorer tries to shut down.
Right. What it does is it sometimes it gets into an endless loop where on certain sites and certain documents it's trying to open a PDF, and what happens is it opens the PDF and then it kind of blinks for a minute. You see the PDF very briefly. It comes up with a little circular thing, you know, that it's working, what used to be an hourglass. And then it says that it's trying to find a solution for the problem. You know the dialogue, right?
Right.
What version of the of Acrobat do you have installed?
9.2, and the reader is 9, I believe. 9.0, I'm not sure.
Yeah, update both of those. The 9.3-something is the current version.
You think they fixed that?
Yeah, it sounds like it's the Acrobat plugin for Internet Explorers.
And I've done a lot of updates as far as trying to get this up to date, but it should be taking updates automatically, and it hasn't asked me to go.
The Windows updates and the Adobe updates are different. When you go to Windows Update, it only does Windows programs.
Right.
You have to do the Adobe update manually.
Okay.
Or inside
I have something on my computer called Tech Tracker, and it's supposed to tell me whenever there's an update for any of the products I have installed on my computer. So I guess it just didn't flag that.
If you open your Acrobat Reader program directly, there's a check for updates button, I think, in the help menu.
Right.
In addition, in your Adobe software, under Edit Preferences,
mm-hmm.
On the left-hand menu, there's Internet.
Okay.
And there's a box that's probably checked that says Display PDF in Browser. If you uncheck that, when you do try to open a PDF, it will open it directly in Adobe. It'll start up Adobe and open it in a separate window from your browser.
Okay, and thereby avoid the plugin.
Exactly.
That sounds like a good idea.
And, of course, you can also want to install the plugin from Internet Explorer.
Right. Well, this should have been installed, but we'll see. I mean, you're saying, maybe I should update that.
Right. Well, but in addition, even if you don't have a plugin, if you've told Adobe Reader to open it in Internet Explorer,
right?
So if you undo that, you should be slightly better off.
Okay. But you're saying that if I undo that, then I don't need the plugin, right? I mean, if it doesn't say you display it in a browser, then it's going to display it within the Adobe program.
Right. You want to get rid of the plugin, and you want to go into Adobe's Reader itself and say, don't, you know, uncheck Display in Browser.
Okay, so I do that with the Manage the Add-ons in there?
That'll get rid of it, but then you have to actually open Adobe Reader yourself and go into Edit Preferences.
Okay, I got it.
There you go.
Now, one other thing you got to do for us is start telling some friends down there in Jersey about us and tell them to tune in and even try to get one of maybe your stations down there to carry us.
Oh, well, I guess we hear you on the Internet. So.
Right.
Hey, that's fine.
Yeah.
But you can have us live.
Yeah, tell a friend.
Right. My husband is a religious listener.
Super.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
Tell him he doesn't have to listen actually on his knees. He can sit in a chair.
That's right.
Thanks, Michelle.
Okay. All right. Thanks so much.
Yep. All right. So far, we've had Virginia, Rochester, and New Jersey. So I think we're spreading out a little bit.
The radio station too.
Yes, well, I'm continue to spread out. There is no question of that in anyone's mind at this point. No, that's very true. That's very true. All right.
Yeah, are we through the eating holidays yet?
I don't know that I'm Italian. We don't ever. We're never through the eating holidays.
holidays for eating.
You know, it's Tuesday. We eat. That's how it works. All right, our next caller is not going to be Tom.
I messed it up again. I apologize.
Tom, call back. We'll see if we can get you on this time. We're going to give Tom a third try. It's something about Tom. In the meantime, I'll read another. Hold on. He's working on it. Dave's quietly working on it. But in the meantime, I'm going to read a news item. Microsoft has confirmed, blah, 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 speaking of Adobe, has confirmed that the version of Flash bundled with Windows XP contains multiple bugs and urges customers to upgrade to a newer edition of the Multimedia Player plugin. In a security advisory issued Tuesday alongside a one-patch update for the month, Microsoft acknowledged that Flash Player 6 contains numerous vulnerabilities. Flash Player 6 is the version of Adobe software that Microsoft includes in Windows XP. Even in the copies it continues to sell to computer makers who offer the 8-year-old operating system on netbooks, notebooks, and some desktop PCs. Adobe, however, discontinued security support for Flash Player 6 in 2006. Only Windows XP is affected by Microsoft's old Flash Player problem. Newer versions of Windows include newer editions of Flash Player. But make sure you're running the latest no matter what version of Windows you run. Microsoft recommended that users either uninstall Flash Player 6 on Windows XP, a move that could cripple browsing since far too much of the content of the web is Flash-based. Way too much of the content of the web is Flash-based. Or update to a new version of Flash. The current version of Flash Player is 10.0.42.34, which can be downloaded from Adobe's website, and Steve will have that up in just a minute. So our question to you, are you still using an old, vulnerable version of Adobe's Flash Player? Flash Player? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or as increasingly is happening on this show, toll free at 1-800-790-0415. But don't bother to do that right now, since we are going to take a quick break. We will be back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Rob, Nolan. We're gonna fill the studio right here on Soundbites on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Soundbites, celebrating 20 years.
You can only reach certain people through things like Facebook and MySpace. So for radio, it's great because it pushes us up to a new level and really just opens up opportunities for us that we didn't have before.
New artists like These Green Eyes, reaching new audiences every day where it all happens. Radio. To learn more, go to RadioHeardHere.com.
The Pithide Room, Ship's Paradise, The Cotton Club, Shalimar, Jinx and Jones, Indigo's, Ben Keaton's, The Oak Tree Lounge, Top of the Plaza, Round Towner, The Pine Grill, The Glass Onion. Those are places that we all love, but they're really not in the past. The doctor keeps them from being just a memory. Hi, I'm Paul Kiley. Join me every Monday morning from 1 a.m. to 6 a.m. following the Spectrum for Jazz Overnight on your member-supported 24-hour jazz station, Jazz 90.1 and Jazz901.org.
Hello, this is Joelle Van Buren. Join me weekday mornings from 6 till 10 on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 41 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
And before we go back to the phone, I wanted to finish the thought about this Flash Player. Most people don't realize their player plugins, the Flash Player, QuickTime Player, Windows Media Player, all these media things that we use so often, don't realize they're plugins in the browser that need to be updated separately from your OS. And several browsers, Firefox first among them, is starting to check for your browser plugin versions itself and warning you that you need to update.
Right.
Because there are so many exploits in Flash and JavaScript, that's where 90% of the exploits are coming these days, that the browsers are trying to take an active role in making sure you have your plugins updated. So I've also posted a link to the Mozilla plugin checker so that you can check all of the plugins in your browser. It seems to pretty much only work in Firefox. I'm in Safari, and it's telling me what version of all the plugins I have, but it can't tell if they were updated or not,
because right.
that's a JavaScript.
Right.
But if you use Firefox, it will tell you if your plugins are up to date or not.
Nice. Very, very nice. All right, our next caller is Tom. Tom, are you there?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. Where are you calling from, Tom?
Lincoln, Nebraska.
Lincoln, Nebraska. We got Lincoln, people from all over the country.
Yeah. Yeah.
And how are things in beautiful Lincoln, Nebraska?
Oh, well, there's a lot of snow on the ground, and it's 19 degrees Fahrenheit.
Hey, we got you beat.
Oh, yeah?
Yay, somebody in the country we're better than. We're 39 degrees right now.
Oh, heat wave, yeah.
Yeah, we're having a heat wave.
Yeah, we were 46 3 days ago, but it didn't melt snow off.
Yeah.
We had about 18 inches of snow on the ground.
Wow. Yeah, you win, and you can keep it.
Two blizzards in a row.
You can keep it. Wow.
And speaking of blizzards and things going wrong, I'm not a reader user.
Yep.
But I have a question for you about Vista.
Sure.
Vista apparently hides USB ports and all other I/O ports, for that matter, from user programs. I have a USB device that's a small development board for AVR microprocessors, And when I plug that device in, Vista says, oh, look, a new device, and goes out and says, okay, here's a driver for it. Install it. And so I say, okay, install it. And then I go to my program, and my program says there are no ports. I click on USB, and it says I can't talk to that port.
How old a program is this?
Now, I've been told that that's something that Microsoft did deliberately to improve, quote, security, end quote.
Nah. Well, there's the auto mount bug that they fixed.
I'm sorry?
There's something called auto mount. It was originally out on CDs, but they've extended it to any removable media, including flash drives. When you plug in a disk, there's a technology called auto mount that looks on the disk and automatically run, not auto mount, auto run. It's supposed to auto mount.
Well, yeah.
To automatically run a program.
It's just the USB vendor ID and device ID.
Right, and it automatically runs
and
a program mount, on the
and
disk.
And I've got a driver for the device.
Well, but is that driver for Vista? Or is that driver for XP?
Specifically, I don't know. I've heard that other people have gotten it to work.
Well,
but I've never talked to anybody personally that's done so.
A couple of things you should try. First, verify that it is in fact the thing you downloaded is in fact the Vista driver, because if it's a...
Well, they only have one driver.
Well, then check with them to make sure it works under Vista.
I checked with the maker. It's an individual.
Right.
It's not a big corporation. He makes these things and sells them on the side.
Okay.
And he says that some of his users are using Vista, but that they do have headaches.
Yeah,
so
well,
sounds like
that may be one of them.
Right, you're one of them.
What you might try is if you're not running as the administrator.
I am.
Well, then I'm at a loss now. I mean, that's
which version of Vista do you have?
Yeah, which service pack? Which
I tried running.
If you have the XP compatibility mode, you could try that.
Well, what I did was I went to XP finally.
Yeah.
And the only problem with that is that I went to it on a different piece of hardware because my hardware died.
Right.
And this thing is a nice 3.1 gigahertz Pentium 4 that runs like an 800 gigahertz Pentium 2 because it's only got a half a gig of memory on it.
Yep. Well, and that may also be
constantly
part of your problem.
I don't have the problem on XP. My old system had three gigs of memory.
Yeah.
Right.
So it sounds like it is a Vista driver compatibility issue.
Yeah, that's a Vista issue.
And it won't be fixed until the author updates the driver.
Well, the real problem is that drivers under Vista are very different. And that's been one of the issues with Vista. Not a lot of people offered Vista compatible drivers, and so Vista had the same problem Windows Millennium had, which is that nobody wrote drivers for it, and so a lot of things didn't work.
I say that because I've been telling people for the last 2 years that Vista is the ME of the new century.
Yes, we've all been saying it's absolutely true. If you move to Windows 7, you may not have that problem, but
on a half gig machine.
Well, no, you're not. But I'm saying I understand that. But I'm saying if you did, you might not have that problem.
Right.
But clearly, if he wrote the thing specifically for XP, then the only thing he can guarantee it'll run under is XP. And
right.
I don't know what else to tell you. There's unless you can run it in compatibility mode. Under Vista, you should be able to right click on the file itself, and you should have the opportunity to run it under compatibility mode, and that may solve the problem. But again, that's the program, not the driver, and I can't promise that that's going to work.
Right.
It's one of the reasons Vista has had all the problems it's had.
Right. Well, it's good to find a users group that's still active. The one I was in California was the largest one in California for years, but it disappeared about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
There was an interesting documentary on CNBC last week, was it? It was their tech week, and they did a lot of tech stories, and they ran the Welcome to Macintosh documentary, which was about the beginnings of the computer itself. And they ran a documentary called Mac Heads, which is about fans and fanatics and users groups. And they interviewed Rains Cohen from the BCS, Berkeley Computer Society, and the Boston Mac Users Group.
Uh-huh.
And they talked about how they were, 20,000 members strong, each of them. And And basically, the users groups have been dying because of the internet, and we're running into that locally here with Apple Cider, and yeah. I'm sure the PC Cube people are running into the same problem too.
All right, Tom, I'm sorry that we don't have a better answer for you. I wish we did.
Well, that's okay. I was just looking because a lot of the applications I'm running now don't like to run under XP.
Right.
They want Vista or higher. And
right. I'm sorry. I don't know what to tell you. You got to talk to the guy who wrote the.
Yeah. And that's right. One reason a lot of people
I am in
are
in contact with him.
Good.
Yeah.
He's the guy. He's the only guy who can solve it.
And
all right.
That's the reason
okay,
a lot of people.
Well, have fun.
Thanks, Tom.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And that's a lot of reason people are keeping multiple computers around, one on each OS. You've got something that only runs on XP, keep a machine with XP.
Yep. It happens. It's happening far too often. Yep. And you know what? It happens generally at a time like this when you're moving from one operating system to another. You know, when people moved from Windows 3.1 to XP, we had the same problem. XP to Vista, we had it huger because nobody writes anything for Vista. But for 7, they've done a better job of integrating XP drivers into it. Not great job, but a better job. The big problem people have in those cases really come between 32 and 64-bit systems.
And the problem we've run into on the Macintosh side is Apple, I guess abandoning is the right word. They're abandoning old technologies so they can move into the future technologies. So with the Intel Macs 3-4 years ago now, we can't run Classic anymore.
Right.
So all your OS 9 applications are gone. With Snow Leopard, they've dropped Apple Talk. So really old printers are gone if they don't also support IP.
Right.
That's one of the issues that Microsoft has been facing is they're trying to move their OSs into the future, take advantage of new technologies, but there's this huge demand for backward compatibility. I mentioned it last week. I've got a customer still running DOS programs because they work for him.
You got to have it. I mean, there's too many folks out there with too much other software that they just haven't, you know, or it could be out of business. I mean, it could be totally out of business, but yet it still does the job for what they want it to do.
Yep.
And it's real hard to tell someone when their computer breaks. You buy a new computer now. It's very hard to get old computers. It's hard to get old software. So you buy a new computer, and they have to buy all new software. And in businesses, you know, especially small businesses, it hurts more. They may have to update all their other computers, too, to be compatible with the new computer because the new stuff doesn't work with the old stuff sometimes.
Absolutely right. All right, we're going to go back to the phones, and we're going to talk to Tom. Is this the Tom that we've been not?
Yes.
Not talking to forever?
It's the ones that have been hanging up on me.
Sure. Well, we finally got you through. Where are you calling from, Tom?
I'm calling from Newark, New York.
Where?
Newark. N-E-W-A-R-K. I got a head cold, so maybe it's hard.
There you go.
Well, that's just how they pronounce it, Newark.
Newark. What can we do for you, Tom, now that we finally got you here?
Well, I got a Dell computer that want boot up. It says that my config system is corrupted, and I can boot it up with a SystemWorks boot disk, but I can't get to my. I have two drives in here, C and D, and my backup's on D, and SystemWorks, which is Save and Restore Norton, can't reach that disk.
Right. Is it really a separate disk, or is it a partition on your?
Nope, it's two complete disks.
Excellent.
Exact twin disks. And I always save things on the second disk, and everything else is on the other disk.
Well, there's two things that you can do. One is to just first unplug that D drive, right, that backup disk, and then just reformat your whole machine. Or you can try installing Windows over Windows.
Yeah, that's what it comes up when you're in a normal mode. It says push R and install your disk, but the only way you can install your disk is to change the boots to the CD driver.
Right. You boot the Windows CD, and then you can repair. There's actually two R options. The first option is for R is Recovery Console. You want to skip past that one and do the second option, the repair install, and that will reinstall Windows on top of the existing Windows on your C drive. Now, does it actually say config.sys error? Or is it say?
It says missing or corrupted Windows system 32/config system.
Okay, so yeah. If it was just a config.sys error, that's a lot easier to fix.
Yeah, but when it's corrupted, you don't fix it. You just reinstall Windows over itself.
It worked the night before, and the next day it was gone.
That's how it works.
Yep.
Everything works until it breaks.
Okay, the other problem I had is my graphic card's going, and I have, you know, lines running through my computer. Mm-hmm. And I did order a new one, but
your Windows boot error could even be your hard drive failing if the file is lost.
How old is this system, and what version of Windows are you running?
2004 Dell XPS Generation 2.
And what version of Windows are you running?
XP Professional.
Okay.
2004.
Mm. Yeah. It
6 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah, the error you're getting on Windows boot could be a failing hard drive, and it can't find a Windows system file for one reason or another. It could be the directory's corrupted. It could be the hard drive is failing.
It boots up all right on a SystemWorks boot disk.
Right, because it's not booting your hard drive.
But see, if you can get it to boot off the CD, drive.
Yes, I can.
And you put the Windows CD in.
I didn't do that because I wasn't sure about what happened.
I'm going to tell you what to do. Since you're far away and you can't get to the board to see this, what I'm going to do is tell you very quickly. What you do is you put in the CD. You'll have it boot from the CD. It's going to tell you it wants to install Windows. You're going to say okay to that. You're going to press it. There is going to be, you're going to see down at the bottom of the screen, just to forewarn you, you're going to see a repair there. Ignore the first time you see the repair. You're going to want to go ahead and say continue. It's going to ask you to go with the license agreement. You got to hit F8. You go ahead and hit F8. Then you're going to see another screen, and down at the bottom, you're going to see the option to repair. Select it at that point. What it will do is put Windows over Windows, and it will correct it for you.
So the first repair I pass.
Yep.
And then I have to go F8.
Right, the first one is recovery console.
Repair on the bottom.
Right, right, right. And okay. Do that, and what it'll do is put Windows over Windows, all your programs, all your files will still be there.
Yeah, okay. Now, can I ask you, do you know any way of reaching the D disk?
Well, once you've reinstalled Windows, it should also find the D drive when you reboot.
Yep.
Now, you see, on the thing, it shows three disks. But, where your hard disk drives,
right.
But it doesn't show the D.
I don't know what to tell you. If it's a separate mode,
and I bring up all the system stuff.
If it's a truly separate drive,
yes.
Right.
Then what will happen is after you reinstall Windows over itself, when you reboot, the D drive will appear.
And if the D drive is not a bootable drive, it won't show in your boot menu.
No, it's not a bootable drive.
Then that's why
it doesn't show up.
Okay. Now, the other question I asked, if I took that drive out and brought it to one of you guys, you could take the information out of it.
Yes, we could.
Well, more importantly, you should bring the whole machine.
Yeah.
Right, because the real problem may well be that with a six-year-old machine, it could be the drive that's dying, it could be the motherboard that's dying, it could be any one of 100 things. You don't want to pay for something that isn't going to fix the problem. So if you bring it to one of these guys,
the vertical lines on the screen,
right,
right. But eventually,
you tried another monitor and it had the same thing.
But you don't want to fix one problem and leave all the others.
Yeah.
So you want to bring the whole machine to one of these guys and then let them do.
I was thinking that
a full system. Yeah.
I might. Okie doke. Get another computer and then bring the whole thing.
Yeah. If there's too many,
there you go.
If there's too many things wrong, you fix the graphics card and then the hard drive fails and then something else fails and something else fails. Yeah.
But I talked to the Dell guy, and he couldn't even figure out how to get into the DVD drive.
Right. Well, bring it in, and one of these guys will be able to deal with it.
Okay, I'm going to try the Windows over first.
There you go. You got nothing really to lose.
Right,
on
you, can't,
go for
you
it.
Can't lose. Go for
and
it.
And I talked to the Norton people. They told me if I get to the D drive, they would update the computer back for me.
I understand, but do this and see what happens.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks, Tom.
Bye.
Well, that's the whole thing you run into with it, that old of a machine. That's where I'd want to actually see, like you said, test out the hard drive, see if it's worth putting any more money into it. Because sometimes, I know it's not always a good time to do things, but sometimes you just got to cut bait and...
It's like fixing up an old car. Is it worth fixing up, or should you just junk it and get a new one?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you got to save.
I junked it and got a new one.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, he snuck up on me.
I did.
I'm so used to the blue one.
Okay, I come into the parking lot, and there's Dave inside his car getting his bag out and everything else. I drove all around him, parked right next to him. He didn't even see me there.
Stealth.
I am ninja. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco. I don't know if Rob Linton or Nolan are even still in the building or what they're doing. They came for the donuts. We're going to find no more donuts left. But we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, and we are right here. So give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. We've had more calls from out of town than in town so far this week. Keep that up. Back in just a couple of moments on member-supported Jazz 90.1. I'm done now. I give up.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free 800-790-0415. Online at soundbites.org. Soundbites continues next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Celebrating 20 years on air, Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester.
A public service of the Greece Central School District.
Jazz 90.1.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
I have a dream today.
Hi, I'm Isaac Newton Ferris, Jr., President and CEO of the King Center in Atlanta. My Uncle Martin's words still inspire us today, but his vision cannot be fully realized unless we join together to strengthen our communities through everyday acts of service to others. Honor his memory this King Day and throughout the year by volunteering in your community. Make it a day on, not a day off. Go to mlkday.gov and get involved.
When you underwrite the programming of Jazz 90.1, you make your business known to people who enjoy jazz as much as you do. Your on-air message is short and tasteful, making it easy to remember, with basic information about your business, including how to reach you. Underwriting is economical, too. To find out more about underwriting Jazz 90.1, call 966-2660. That's 966-2660.
The next time you rearrange that messy closet, why not set aside time to put your financial house in order as well? There are steps that can save you money and prevent hassles in the future. Make sure your credit report is accurate. Clean up bad credit by paying bills on time and paying down balances. And dispose of all unnecessary documents by shredding them. For more tips, call the National Foundation for Credit Counseling today at 800-388-2227 or visit them at nfcc.org, a public service from the NFCC.
Businesses benefit from underwriting Jazz 90.1. Not only do you reach about 20,000 listeners a week, that includes listeners who only listen to jazz. In addition to being beneficial, underwriting Jazz 90.1 is very affordable. To find out how your business can benefit from underwriting Jazz 90.1, call 966-2660. That's 966-2660.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 2 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbite. Wow, we have a caller on the line. Not that that's been odd lately, nope. But he's actually here local, and that's what makes it odd. Our next caller is Don from Hilton, New York. How are you, Don?
Fine. You were talking about updating the Flash Adobe Flash Player.
Yep.
And I think since I made the call, I think I finally figured out how to tell which version I had. But it wasn't obvious. I played with the Internet Explorer and Firefox, and they didn't tell me. So then I finally went to add and subtract programs, and I found out that I had the Flash Player 10. So,
all right.
There's a website you actually can go to. I never can remember the whole link, so I just Google about Flash. It's adobe.com/software/flash/about, and we've had links before. And it actually, in your browser, tells you what version you're running. So right now. I've got version 10.0.42.34, which is the current version of Flash.
Now, what was the latest version of the Adobe Reader? I discovered I have 9.2.
I just downloaded a 9.3 something for my system.
Okay, so maybe I better update that too. But it wasn't obvious how to tell.
So. Yeah, well, here's the deal. There's really two different things you're looking at. One is the plugin, and one is the actual software itself. What we're talking about is the actual software itself that's run by the plugin.
Okay.
Yeah. And so you want to make sure that you've actually updated the real software itself and not just the plugin.
Okay, so I think I updated it by going, and I just looked at, I downloaded the latest version of the Flash player, and yep. I'll do that with the other one, with the reader, and just run them.
Yep.
Do the updates. But I wasn't sure how to find out which version I had.
Right.
Because I couldn't find Adobe.
Right.
You know,
well, but Microsoft doesn't make it easy.
So.
Microsoft does not make it easy.
No. Okay, so thank you.
Thank you.
Most of the browsers have an installed plugins command or about plugins command. Actually, you should be able to do that. About colon plugins. Yeah, about colon plugins. Plugins with a hyphen or without a hyphen? Your browser will tell you what plugins you have installed, but don't necessarily tell you what version of the plugin you have installed.
Right. I just went to that adobe.com/software/flash/about and discovered I'm running the latest version, 10.0.42.34.
Yep.
I'm very excited.
You're up to date then.
I'm up to date. That's me.
Scary.
Modern in every way. So
you're ahead of the curve.
I am ahead of the curve. I may actually be the curve for all we know. Is it time?
Wait a minute. You mean for this?
All right, kiddies, it's that time again. Get your footy jammies on, grab a mug of hot cocoa, sit Indian style in a semicircle around the rocking chair, because if we can slap them awake, it's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave!
Yo!
Pegged those meters.
I think I just blew on my own ears. Well, listen, Dick Tracy... You know,
careful there. We're not in delay, are we?
You sit there and complain because people are doing work for you. The machine gets infected, and it's only because of your stupidity, and you want to blame it on somebody else? Wrong.
At least blame it on your kids.
No. No.
What else are they for, you know?
Hello. No, this is at a work environment, and, you know, this individual is sitting there trying to blame his employees because all of a sudden one of the machines is infected. And they're blaming it on this and that. I go, well, wait a minute. What were you doing? And they go, well, we're doing some research. I says,
yep.
Yeah. For what? Well, we had to do some research for this individual. He said we had to get this stuff together, so we're all working on it again. And mine happened to get infected with that PC Spyware's 2010. I says, well, that, and he's trying to say, well, he's blaming it me on emails and all this other stuff. I said, no. All bets are off. Once you're going out looking, and in this particular business, which I won't get into, yes, it's subject to, you got to go out and you go, and these folks, it's not like they were born yesterday. You know, they know what the heck they're doing in that, and they can be going to legitimate sites and getting hacked.
Right.
It's just the way it is, folks. So don't try to blame, you know, what your folks are doing for you. They're legitimately going out there doing the stuff, and they're going to get nailed. And
right.
It's not because of their negligence or they're goofing off or this other stuff. I'm sorry. Most time I will complain about folks that use business phone, you know, computers and all this for, say, letting their kids play on it and all that. Yes, you deserve to get hit. But when you sit there and tell your employees to go out and search this, this, and this because you need it, and then they get nailed, don't bitch, because it'll happen. It's Russian roulette out there right now.
And let me tell you a couple of things that you need to do. First, if you're going to have a machine that first, at work, no machine. No machine should be running as administrator. Everybody should have a non-administrator account that they do day-to-day work on. If you need to update something, then your system administrator, whoever you pretend to be your system administrator, can log in as the administrator and do the work. But most of the time, you don't work as administrator. That cuts down on a lot of this. Secondly, I know everybody wants to do their own research at their own desk, yada, yada, yada. But you know what? When you're doing research like this that may take you to places that have problems like this, buy a Linux machine, set it up, and you do your research on that. A browser's a browser's a browser. You don't have to pretend you're too stupid to run Linux. You can get the Linux system running. You run your web browser on it. It runs Firefox just fine, thanks. And you can do your research from there. And when you get your answer, then you can go to your Windows machine and download whatever you need. But that way, you can't infect your main machines and you can't infect the Linux machine. So why not do that? Set up one machine to be the place where you do your research. And you know what? If you're running a company and the choice is infect your entire company or be secure, then you tell your employees, suck it up. You can't do this research at your desk. You're going to do this research at this one machine. And if you don't like it, well, there's probably 40 people lined up for your job. Get over it.
Especially with the dangers on the internet. It's so easy to misread an error message, to get taken in by pop-up windows that look so real. It's real hard.
But try, just blaming people, saying, well, it's all your fault.
Like they did it on
purpose?
You're
going to pay for this repair? No, get out. I'm sorry. You know what I mean? One, two, three.
All right, that's it. Here we go. That's it, kiddies. Put your empty hot cocoa mug in the sink. Get out of your footy jammies. We're going to have to double his dose of tranquilizer. We'll put Uncle Dave on the shelf for another week. Yeah, put me next to him for that one, I think. And we'll go back to the phones. And apparently everybody who's calling today is named Tom. Our next caller is Tom. Where are you calling from, Tom?
I'm calling from Penfield.
And how are things in Penfield, New York?
Well, they're bright and sunny, and everything is going great here.
Sure, for now, because their sun is out.
Yeah, very nice.
What can we do for you?
I called last week. I've got a notebook that I'm running Windows 7 and Ubuntu on now, dual boot. And I just wanted to mention that when I installed Ubuntu, I guess when I installed it, I didn't realize I had to resize the partition in Windows 7 first. So it installed, but it installed in a very small part of the drive, I suppose.
Yep.
And I couldn't actually put my other files on it afterwards because I had very little space left.
Yep.
So anyway, I went back and I resized the Windows 7 partition. I shrunk it, and then I was able to install Ubuntu on about half of the drive, and it's working pretty good.
Excellent.
So I worked through that, and I'm trying to do some other things on Ubuntu. I've been using it full time now for everything on the internet and whatever else I've got to use the computer for. And I downloaded Second Life.
Yeah.
I'm going to start using that, getting into that, and just trying it out.
Sure.
So I just installed it, and I've got a little problem here. It's minor, but I just wonder if you could maybe help me with this.
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
I've got an install icon that comes up that looks like a little spring with a shelf on top of it, and I'm trying to get the Second Life icon to show up on this launcher. And installing Second Life was no problem.
It works.
But yeah, it works. I just got in there. I set up an account, and I'm just starting to use it a little bit. So I've also downloaded, I guess it's a PDF or whatever, a little manual that I'm going to go over and just to get used to using it. But I'm trying to get the Second Life icon to show up on this launcher, and I'm having a hard time with that. What's the difference between a .png file and a .svg file? Because when I browse for icons, I get all these icons that come up inside of Ubuntu that are .svgs, and the one that comes with the Second Life download is a .png.
Right. They're two different file formats for graphics.
Yeah, ping graphics and then scalable vector graphics is SVG.
I'm trying to I was trying to, I brought up GIMP, and I wanted to save the .png as an SVG,
mm-hmm.
but I don't see that option in there.
No, you might try saving it as an XPM.
XPM.
XPM, and I don't know what that stands for. X as in Xavier, P as in Paul, M as in Mary.
Yeah.
It's an X Windows pixel map.
Thank you so much. That's very good. It should take either.
So I guess the bottom line question is, what format do icons need to be under Linux?
Yeah. This particular thing, I browse, I right click on this thing, and it comes up with properties, and then it comes up with launcher properties, and I click on it, and it brings up my icons, and all the icons inside of the Linux system are .svgs. There's different GNOME and you know, just a whole bunch of them in here. And I when I do go and finally find the .png, it doesn't like it. It doesn't bring it in and attach it to the
right.
launcher.
You, like I said, what you really want is the XPM file.
All right, I'll give that a try.
Yeah, that was specifically designed for icon pixel maps.
There may not be one that came. I don't have it on this machine. I don't have Second Life on this machine. There may not have been one that came with it. I don't know where I found one.
But you got to come and join us Friday nights.
Yeah, I'll probably do that once I get used to using it.
Yep, yep.
It's a mystery right now.
Well, it's they're all like that, but you'll be able to figure it out. Yep. But yeah, that's what you need is that XPM machine, the XPM file, and I don't know where you can certainly use one of the other XPMs that come up, right? When you look for, you see a whole bunch of other things, Starburst and stuff like that. Yeah. But I got an XPM from somewhere, and I don't remember where. I think I just searched. I searched Google. I think I'll do it right now.
Hiding, you know, finding where that icon is. Now, is the icon for Second Life in Second Life's own folder?
It is.
Yeah.
But it's the PNG, and it just doesn't seem to want to use it here. So.
That's very odd. You think the icon would come with the program already?
Well, you would certainly think so, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Well, you know, I looked this up on the internet for, you know, how to download Second Life, and so I went through the instructions for doing that, and that there was instructions for getting the icon to look, with the correct Second Life logo.
Right.
And that was actually, the person mentioned that that's the most difficult thing to do with the whole installation of Second Life on Linux. Is to just get the icon to go in place. And I found out that that's true. And the instructions that were given on that website didn't work for me, so that's why I called.
Right. That I don't know. I do not know what to tell you. And unfortunately, I can't get to Second Life here at the school. It's blocked. So, but that's the way to do it. And if you don't find it, come join us Friday night in Second Life, and I'll figure out a way to get you my file.
Yeah. Well, so I've been bumping around at Ubuntu for 2 or 3 weeks now, and having
a lot of fun.
A good time with it. Yeah. I've had some issues. You know, things are coming up all the time, but I managed to work through most of them, and I've got a pretty nice running system right now, I think.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Okay. Well, thank you again for your help.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
Catch you later.
Yep, bye.
I just got a tweet from Tayville. I will be speaking to him later. I will absolutely be speaking to him later. but you can also Twitter us, sound_bytes, if you want to send us a tweet. We're in Facebook. You can join our Facebook group right from our website at soundbytes.org. So we've got a lot of that stuff going on, all that social media stuff. So you can join us there at those things doing that stuff. We need another out-of-state caller because we now have, let's see, one, two, three, four. We have four in-state callers and only three out-of-state callers. We've had three out-of-state callers today. Nebraska, New Jersey, and Virginia.
Nice. I heard Jersey's still part of the U.S.
That's what that so far this week. It's Vermont that's I think.
I think we want to donate the lower part of New York State to them.
Believe me, we can donate all of it east of.
Have you heard about the fight over the Statue of Liberty? It's physically closer to Jersey, and Jersey wants to take control of it because of all the tax revenue it generates.
Yeah.
But right now, New York owns it.
Well, and God knows New York needs all the tax revenue it can generate. All right. Good keeping. It's very funny. We have. It's music time, which means that we're going to take another break, which means we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. Give us a call. You know the numbers. I'll give them to you when we come back. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
America's longest-running computer show, Sound Bites, celebrating 20 years.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? Would you feel scared or proud? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Would you rather make your own way or spend a lifetime saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or go to peacecorps.gov.
The best is yet to come, and babe, won't it be fine?
On Sunday, January 24th, Jazz 90.1 will celebrate the 10th anniversary of Otto Bruno's Sunday Music Festa, and you're invited. There will also be food, refreshments, and giveaways.
We're gonna drain the cup dry.
But seating is limited, so reserve your tickets now. You can also tour the Jazz 90.1 studios, meet on-air DJs, and enjoy great conversation with other Jazz 90.1 listeners. Tickets are $10 for non-members. Admission is free for current members of Jazz 90.1 who have made a financial contribution to Jazz 90.1 within the past 12 months. Call 966-2660 to reserve your tickets today. That's 966-2660. Come celebrate 10 years of the Sunday Music Festa with Otto Bruno, Sunday, January 24th at Jazz 90.1 Studios, 1139 Maiden Lane. And we'll see you there.
I'm Steve Wozniak, and you're listening to Sound Bites.
Jazz 90.1 is supported in part by our members and by Havana Mo's, located at 125 East Avenue in the East End. One of the only legal smoking bars in the city, Havana Mo's features the East End Jazz Boys live every Saturday night from 9:30 to 2 a.m. For more information, you can call 325-1030.
Hi, this is Charles Benoit. Join me and the entire Smart Set tonight from 5 to 6 right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at, I have no idea, 22 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And a shout-out comes to us from our friend of the show, Chris Reich, on Twitter. Very nice. Love to see that. Love to see Chris. Yeah, we all love Chris. All right. We're going to go back to the phones. We have Dar. Dar, are you there?
Yep. How you doing, guys?
Peachy, and how are things in beautiful Toronto, Ontario, Canada?
Same as down there in lovely Rochester.
Very nice. You guys get less snow than we do, though.
Absolutely.
You're on the right side of the snow belt of the
lake effect.
Lake effect thing, yeah.
LEFs, yeah. About the rent, if the good listeners would like to read something similar. On the web, It's entitled, it's by Ken Starks, The Thin Line Between Victim and Idiot.
Ooh, that sounds good.
The thin line between victim and idiot. Nice. And this is out on the web. If we do a Google search for Ken Starks, The Thin Line Between Victim and Idiot, we'll find it.
It's in the latest issue of the LinuxGazette.net.
Excellent. Excellent. I will definitely be reading that after the show.
The amazing thing about these Linux guys is that they don't mince words, do they?
No, they don't. One of the things that we find are with particularly the younger generation of computer users, they're much rawer in the things they'll say to people. I don't know if that's because, you know, still being in school and things like that. You remember when we were in school before we got any sort of civil polish to us, we were much ruder to each other and much more. Or before we got electricity. Shut up. I will come over there and slap you back to childhood. And in your case, that will be a light tap. So shut up. And they don't mince words at all, ever, do they?
No. One second thing that is so exciting, speaking of old guys.
Yeah.
That the Lenovo, that touchpad thingy that debuted at a computer show.
Right.
Designed by Richard Sapper. S-A-P-P, as in Peter, E-R.
Yeah.
Now, this guy was born in 1932.
Yep. These are the guys who know what they're doing.
Honest to God, kettles, cars. This guy's done it all.
Yep. What we find is with the older folks, when they design something, first, of course, we use chisels, and I'm not going to shut up over there, Rob the Baby Linton. Hey, really, I'm going to buy you your first razor someday and teach you how to use it. It'd be nice. but what they tend to use is the fewest number of components, the best design, the simplest design, because they'll work harder to do more with less.
But the thing is, they think laterally.
Yep. Absolutely. You're absolutely right, Dar. Mm-hmm. It's and that's one of the things that you can't teach people. You know, they have to grow up understanding it and learning it on their own and learning how to do those things. And a lot of people today don't.
And that's why apprenticeship.
Yep.
Was so important. You got to start at the bottom.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And that leads us to the whole thing of entitlement, which we're finding happens a lot to kids both in and just graduating from schools these days.
Well,
they believe
special,
they're entitled.
Right?
Exactly right. They've been told by their parents they're special. They know they're special.
Everyone gets a trophy for participating.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
well, who's the comedian? He says, let me tell you the difference between my generation and your generation. My generation, we graduated from high school. Parents were there, mom and dad, shook our hands, told us now get the hell out and get a job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now that you guys graduate from school and all four of your parents of whatever select set of genders they are come to you and say, congratulations, here's your car. and there's your difference right there between our generation and your generation.
Dinner's at 6 and put your laundry in the basket. Yeah.
Right. And you can keep living in the basement. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Was it George Carlin?
No, I can't think of who it was. It's it'll come to me, but I can't think of who it was off the top of my head. But it'll come to me. All right, Dar, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
I'm looking forward to reading that. Our friend Dar from Toronto, Ontario, Canada, and she has restored the balance. We now have 4 from out of town, 4 from out of the state, 1 from out of the country, who are local. Our next caller is Bob. Where are you calling from, Bob?
Greece, about 2 blocks from you.
Okay, just shout. We can hear you.
Welcome to the U.S.
Well, I figured I'd call and just to tease you a little bit.
Yeah.
Because you said you were on the cutting edge.
Yeah, that's us.
I'm calling on a droid.
Oh, I hate you. Oh, I hate you like you can't believe.
I kind of figured as much.
Oh, you stink on ice. You really do. You slime.
I got it just before Christmas, and I was hoping you'd get one to talk about it.
I so desperately, desperately want a droid. Unfortunately,
do I have to do the dump?
Yeah, no, you might have. Keep your hand on the button. The deal is, of course, I'm a Verizon customer, so I can get the Motorola droid. But the problem is, it's that one every two deal. You can get a new phone every 2 years. I'm not up until like the end of July. So
I think you might be able to do it early.
Well, certainly not.
I did.
No, I tried the day it came out, and absolutely everybody wanted to help me. Nobody could get it done.
You can do it early if you pay more.
I could pay the $600 and get it done today. I could do that, but I do not intend to do that. But, oh, do you love it?
I love it.
See?
I'm still learning it, but I love it.
Oh, you're gonna love it. It's just my friend Tom is always coming to my office saying, hey, look at this cool thing I found. Hey, look at how neat this is. Look at I can do this. And, of course, I slap him and send him back out of my office. I hate him.
My question for you is, should I be concerned on viruses?
What?
Should I be worried about antivirus stuff?
Yes. Yes, you should.
Give it to you and try it out for
Let me have it, and I'll try it out for a couple of months. The deal is this. You have to be kind of careful. One of the things that that Google is doing differently from Apple is there is a store, an app store, if you want to call it that.
Right.
It's open to everyone. And therefore, you have to worry a little more about the quality of what you download.
Okay.
There are not in the store, but in third-party places, there are some malicious apps. You have to be very careful about what you download and what you let them have access to. And there is somebody has a Droid version of antivirus. I just read about it. The Droid Security at droidantivirus.appspot.com. Of course, I don't know anything about it, so I don't know if it's legit or not.
Okay.
But it's there. And if you go and look in the Droid forum. At droidforums.net, there's a lot of talk about an antivirus.
Okay.
I hear someone saying, "Now, malware only applies to PCs."
Well, this basically is.
It is a PC. It is running a Linux OS on it.
Right. And while we don't have to worry about Windows viruses, if somebody creates an app for the Droid that does something bad, they created it specifically for the Droid. So, yes, you should at least be very careful. There's a program called Lookout at mylookout.com. Again, I don't know a lot about it, but you might want to start looking up. It works on Blackberries and it works on Droids, and it's something that you might want to take a close look at.
Okay, because the few downloads that I have done, they all request information about your location and your keystrokes and stuff like that. You've got to acknowledge that they can have access to that.
And that's right. One of the cool things about the modern smartphones is the location awareness that
right.
a lot of these
GPS
programs
is always on.
Yeah, the GPS is on and the programs are location aware, and they can tell you, you know, deals at restaurants you're nearby. They can tell you if any of your friends are nearby. I just read about an app from Greg Grunberg, who does Heroes. That's his day job. His night job, he's an app developer.
How cool is
and,
that?
And he wrote an app called Yowza that gives you deals on your smartphone, specifically for the iPhone now, and they're working on other platforms too. You walk; it tells you what stores near you have what deals, and then you give the coupon code from your phone to the cashier, and you get a discount right there.
Nice. I still like that Woot app. The simple one of the Woot. I've got that on there on my iTouch, so now I can just every day just hit the button for the Woot and see if there's anything I really want to grab, because they do have, you know, some great deals from time to time.
All right, but I'm officially not talking to you anymore, Bob, because you have a Droid. Tay thinks he's off the hook. He's got a Droid, but he's not. There's no question.
Tay got one?
I can't wait to get one, because you'll be very impressed, and it's really a decent platform.
I'm so waiting. I am so anxious to get one. Listen, if there's anybody from Verizon who has any sort of authority anywhere and is listening, I want a Droid. I want who better than me to talk about it on the air and do everything else and build up delight for this phone?
Absolutely, and we need the help. Because they don't tell you much at the store. They just kind of hand it to you and say it's a computer tool, and you walk out. I get GPS coming home with it.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the things that
you got to learn it. It's complicated.
Mm-hmm. That's one of the things that most amazed me about it is that it has the whole turn-by-turn directions. You actually talk to it. Find me the nearest, you know, whatever store, say. And it actually will give you turn-by-turn directions, just like a GPS.
It's better than my Garmin.
Yeah,
the GPS part's free.
So. Yeah, and it's free. That app is free in it. Yeah. That's it. Thanks, Bob.
Yeah.
You've ruined my entire weekend,
I'm
Bob.
Sorry.
Congratulations. Enjoy your droid.
Yeah, but you're still paying for the other stuff. That's the other, you know.
It's that $100 a month-ish.
Yeah, I mean, I can use my iTouch. You know, there's so many Wi-Fi places nowadays that you can go around and, you know, hit free Wi-Fi.
Yep.
That I could, I've got an app that'll sit there and do texting. So whether I'm, say, you know, down somewhere on Park Avenue, I can sit there and dial into one of those. I can sit there and text for free. I don't need my email and, you know, all that other stuff right there while I'm out. Sorry.
Right. Yeah, CNBC also did a documentary called Planet of the Apps last week.
Oh, that's very cute.
That's very cute. And they followed a couple of app developers who were working on an app and following them through the process and trying to get it submitted in time before their money ran out. And then they also followed a developer who wrote this really cool program, submitted it to Apple, and hasn't heard anything.
Yeah.
In a year.
Yeah.
And that's part of the problem. But the problem is that there's no specific guidelines. We all know that porn is unaccepted, you know, but there's no specific guidelines about what you can and can't put in the store because Apple is trying to maintain the quality of the programs and right. trying to prevent bad programs from getting through.
Like Shaken Baby.
Well, that's
sorry.
That was one of the stories they focused on. There is nothing illegal or what was the word they used? It's a bad idea, but it's not illegal for
it's
a program.
It's in horribly poor
right.
taste.
Horribly poor taste, but not illegal. So there's a lot of really horribly poor taste.
For those of you who don't know, Shaken Baby is this application for the iPhone, and what happens is it randomly the baby will cry. And the only way you can, and it's a horrible sound too, by the way.
Is it
the only
still
way
around?
You can, yeah. Well,
it was originally approved and then withdrawn after the public
and
outcry.
And the only way you stop it is to shake your iPhone until there's little X's over the baby's eyes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they approved that. Mm. There wasn't somebody with a brain who sat down and said, "Yeah, it passes all our criteria." But it's still a really, really bad idea.
You know what would have happened is if they had blocked it, they'd have would have been sued for censorship. Yeah.
And freedom of speech and another.
So you can't win either way. But on the Droid platform, anyone can write a Droid app and release it anywhere, and that can be a problem. You can get malicious apps.
Yep.
And that was one of the things Apple was trying to stop is in the earlier days of the Palm, where the Palm smartphones were the dominant platform. The big problem was you got so many programs running on your Palm that you couldn't make a phone call and it just died. And so Apple wanted to stop that. And even now on the BlackBerry, we see that sometimes. You get so many little programs running. Because the interface is kind of weird that there's no obvious way to actually quit a program. We switch to another program to do something else and that first program is still running back there.
But not on the iPhone, though.
But not on the, right, not on the iPhone.
iPhone the iPhone doesn't do multitasking.
No, well, it does, but only with Apple's programs.
Right.
Yeah. So, and that's to keep making sure that it will play phone calls, basically.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. All right. Our next caller is Jason. Where are you calling from, Jason?
Just outside Altoona, Pennsylvania.
Excellent. How are things in Altoona?
Oh, not too bad. I just read that article that was a Dar mentioned. And I have one question about it.
Sure.
I know you guys haven't read it, but haven't you said that even Linux has its exploitable loopholes and things, and it's just because it's not widely used that people aren't writing anything against it?
Well, yes and no. There are a couple. You're partially right. Linux, like every other operating system, has loopholes. But there are two things that really keep Linux safer. One is that there are fewer people writing things against it, so it's less of a target. But the second thing is that the architecture is very different. You don't run, under most versions of Linux, you don't run as administrator. So you have to explicitly give a program permission to break outside of your little sandbox. And consequently, while a system could, you know, you could still get viruses like that run on your machine and can send out malicious emails or whatever. They can't get at the operating system and run in the background. They can't get at the heart of the system and do some real damage and take over and do things. Now, there are types of programs called rootkits that do that, but they're harder to run under Linux. So it's possible, but it's not impossible, but it's more difficult and more unlikely.
All right. Well, the only reason I brought it up is because that article makes it sound like that Linux is inherently, immune to any type of tampering.
Well, it is less easy to do, but nothing is immune. There are versions of Linux, SE Linux, Secure Linux, that make it even more difficult. Unlike other versions of operating systems under SE Linux, it's almost impossible to run anything without user approval.
And the fact that it's harder to write virus or malware for Linux and even the Mac is one of the issues, because as we've sort of found in the past, most of the virus writers in Windows are kids. That we call script kiddies that just write some or follow someone else's script to make a virus or malware or Trojans.
Right.
And in fact, a lot of the times the problems that this malicious software causes isn't the software itself, it's that it's badly written.
All right. Well, I just didn't want anybody to read that article and think, oh, this is the cure-all for me.
No, I absolutely agree. It is not the cure-all. Linux is harder to damage, but not impossible under any means. No operating system is 100% secure. We've said that over and over again. Thanks a lot, Jason. We have to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 40 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
This is Station Manager Rob Linton. Do you have a comment or suggestion for Jazz 90.1? Call our feedback phone today at 966-2407. That's 966-2407. Be heard at Jazz 90.1.
Helping you with your computer questions for over 20 years. Soundbites on member support at Jazz 90.1.
New artist Brooke White talking about radio.
We spent a lot of time particularly listening to the oldies radio station. I grew up really listening to the 60s and 70s and kind of growing this fondness for old music. There's something comforting about listening to the radio and having a DJ. Radio, radio,
tell me what I wanna know, The place to connect with new audiences every day. Radio. Visit RadioHeardHere.com.
This is your Consumer Electronics Minute. If you have one or more old electronic devices and want to dispose of them, first ask yourself, can any of my old electronics be reused or sold? Or if broken, can they be repaired? If the answers are no, then recycling your used electronics when you upgrade to the latest device is your best bet. The Consumer Electronics Association has a special website to locate a recycling facility near you. It's mygreenelectronics.org. Just enter your zip code and indicate the preferred distance to a recycling facility from your area. The result will be a map pinpointing the location of any recyclers along with their addresses and phone numbers. Print it out and you're ready to recycle. That web address again is mygreenelectronics.org. Your Consumer Electronics Minute is a public service by this station and the Consumer Electronics Association, CEA.
Join us on Sundays 5 to 7 on Jazz 90.1 for Big Road Blues, an exploration of vintage blues spanning the 1920s through the 1970s. Tune in to Big Road Blues with host Jeff Harris as he digs deep into blues history, spotlighting blues legends and forgotten blues heroes. Along the way, he'll fill you in on the stories and history behind the music. That's Big Road Blues every Sunday 5 to 7 on Jazz 90.1 with your host, Jeff Harris.
Hey, this is Rip Savage. Join me tonight for Fusion, 10 p.m., right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Believe it or not, folks, it's coming up on 10 years for Otto Bruno. And to, you know, kick off this 10 years on Sunday, January 24th, they're going to have a special party right here at Jazz 90.1 in the high school library. So if you want to come, it's going to be from 11 to 3, but here's the catch. You got to call and get tickets. For members of Jazz 90.1, it's free. For non-members, it's only a mere $10. You want to come, have a good time, hang out, listen to Otto do his shtick and everything else, and there's going to be food and all this other stuff. Should be a really good time. You're going to have to call the station. Call 966-2660 and get your tickets, because there's not going to be any walk-ups. You got to literally have your ticket to get in. So for a great time and help Otto celebrate 10 years, you're going to want to call again, 966-2660, and get your tickets for this great party on January 24th.
Everybody, I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. Do we have somebody? No, we don't. I'm very confused. I've been reading the thin line from Dar gave us the thin line between victim and idiot, and I've started to read it. But of course, we don't take long breaks here. So
yeah, she was talking. She had called back in, was asking, wondering about Jason, about the amount of time that they stay online, Microsoft versus Linux.
Well, that's a very good question. I mean, you mean stay? How do you mean stay online? You mean
I couldn't really go into it all, you know, because
right.
Yeah. There's sort of a fallacy about you have to be online a long time before you get infected, and that long time is about 18 seconds.
Less. I've told the story before. I brought a brand new server up at work. It was behind all our firewalls at work, right? It's a brand new IP address that had never had anything on it before, ever. And the very first entry in the log, was somebody trying to break in.
Yeah, before boot success.
The very first entry. And I laughed because it was a window exploit and I was bringing up a Linux box. But the point is, no machine is safe on the internet. If you're on the internet, you're at risk. Done. There's no time limit.
Do your Sasser story.
My Sasser story?
Didn't you have Sasser in the news? The Sasser Trojan? Looks like it made a lot of big news a few months ago. It had an April Fool's Day trigger on it, and nothing happened. Well, there's still tens of millions of computers that are infected by it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't do anything yet. Right now, it's just propagating. But there's been no control or no command to tell it to do anything bad yet.
Right.
So it's just propagating, and it's using a hole that was fixed a year and a half ago now.
Yeah.
And it's
assuming
you
ran the update and actually fixed it, right?
Yeah.
No, I do have one on the Conficker worm.
Conficker, not Sasser, yeah.
There you go. Yeah, variants of the Conficker worm were still active and spreading during the third quarter, accounting for much of the attack traffic on the internet, according to Akamai Technologies. Although mainstream and industry media coverage of the Conficker worm and its variants has dropped significantly since peaking in the second quarter, it is clear from these data that the worm and its variants are apparently still quite active, searching out new systems to infect, Akamai said in its State of the Internet report for the third quarter of 2009, which was released on Thursday. During the third quarter, 78% of Internet attacks observed by Akamai targeted port 445, which is up from 68% during the previous quarter. Port 445, which is used by Microsoft Directory Services, is the same port that Conficker targets, aiming to exploit a buffer overflow vulnerability in Windows and infect the targeted computer. Most attacks originated from Russia and Brazil, which replaced China and the U.S. as the top two sources of attack traffic. We're falling behind.
Duh.
Russia and Brazil accounted for 13% and 8.6% of the attack traffic, respectively, Akamai said. The U.S., which came in at number 3, accounted for 6.9% of the traffic. Number 4, China, accounted for 6.5%, it said. Port 445 was overwhelmingly the top port targeted by attacks originating in Russia and Brazil, which may indicate the presence of a large number of systems in both countries actively participating in Conficker-related botnets, Akamai said. While Microsoft has issued a patch that fixes the vulnerability exploited by earlier versions of Conficker, experts believe that the worm remains active because many infected machines are running unlicensed copies of Windows and don't have access to security updates. If you're running an unlicensed copy of Windows, you're part of the problem. Citing figures from the Conficker Working Group, Akamai noted that the number of Conficker.A and Conficker.B infections worldwide rose during the third quarter, while infections of Conficker.C actually declined during the same period. So our question to you, are you sure you're protected against the Conficker worm? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, that's 585-966-5299, or toll free 1-800-790-0415. We're even so far We've got five callers from New York State and five callers, well, four callers from other states and one caller from an entirely different country. Thank you, Dar. So we've got five and five, and we want to make sure that that we maintain something close to equality.
I mean, that's great. The amount of folks that we're getting calls, you know, we've never had. Put my eye out. Oh, that almost hurt.
Radio's all fun and games until someone loses an eye.
Yeah. I put an eye out with that. Don't do that.
He just poked himself with the microphone.
Oh, man, that brought a tear to my eye.
It's been sitting there right in front of your face for most of 2 hours now.
I've been, you know, jumping around.
Yeah.
Handling quite a few things. We've had quite a few callers in that, which is really great, like we've been saying.
That's what we love.
But, you know, going back to that worm, though, there's still other iterations of I've been seeing lately that Spyware 2010. Going back to my rant, you know, it's out there, folks, and a lot of folks are, you know, they're running everything, and it's getting around some of them. I mean, you know, it's scary. And, you know, the folks, well, I just had it in here. You know, I'm trying to do this and this. Yeah, I understand that. But, you know, you got to stay on top of it because it's not, oh, well, I was going to update it this week and do it. No, you got to update it. If you're going to be on there and do a lot of surfing, you want to keep those things updated.
Every day.
Yes,
every day.
Because right now it is, you know, unbelievable, you know, the number of folks that are still getting. And the other big thing that's going on, and, you know, I wasn't going to bring it up, but I figured what the heck, is these scams for Haiti.
Oh, my God, they're everywhere.
It didn't hit but 4 hours.
Yeah, yeah.
And they already had some scams up there.
Look, you can go right to redcross.org or go to the White House website.
UNICEF is
doing it. You can text the word Haiti to 90999. And that will donate $10 to relief. But then you start getting all these return emails, and you have to say stop.
To me, that sounds like a scam.
But it's not. That one is legit.
Yeah. Who's at the other end of that phone number?
The Red Cross.
Yeah.
So.
But again, it wasn't but 4 or 5 hours that it was out. And then all of a sudden, the emails and everything else and the scams were out there trying to suck your money.
Yep.
And, again, it was third world countries, you know, preying on somebody else. You know, I mean, that country is pretty hard off as it is anyways.
It's the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere.
I know. Where, you know.
Did you hear the one televangelist said it's because they made a deal with the devil 10 years ago to kick the French out?
Yeah.
And so the earthquake is God's retribution for making a deal with the devil?
Oh, yep.
And he absolutely believes that.
Except, of course, there's no life. It doesn't matter. I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to get involved in
but,
it.
You know,
the point is, yes. And so you got to be careful of who you say yes to. There's all this stuff running around the internet. All the, you know, pass this on because there's a missing child, or pass this on because somebody's sick and wants to get the most number of postcards or whatever that's all about.
And do not send me the threads. You know, these. You got to pass this on, or this is going
to
happen.
Yeah, I don't have to pass it on. Here's the thing.
There's so many fake pass it ons. I wouldn't think anyone would do a real pass it on.
Well, not anymore, right. Here's the thing, folks. God does not count your emails. He's got other ways of determining things. Yeah, so it isn't your email that's going to do it for you. I never pass those things on, even when I know they're legit. I do not pass them on. Don't send them to me. And particularly what makes me crazy, and I'm going to say it again, is when you get 52 copies of it all in the same email.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to send me something, at least cut the other 51 out. And do
51 pages.
Yeah, and do not put my name in the to line. Put people in the blind copy line. That way you don't send my email address to every person on the internet.
And check Snopes, S-N-O-P-E-S. We've talked about them in the past.
Snopes.com.
Yes.
They have quite a bit of information about the earthquake Haiti. It is partially true about texting to 90999. The Red Cross will donate $10. T-Mobile will allow customers to call Haiti without being charged. But the phone company is not donating money. Facebook is not donating money. UPS will not ship packages for free.
No, I told you, it's the Red Cross.
Right. So there's all these fake text messaging notices that are going around mixed in with the real ones that makes it so hard to determine if it's legitimate or not.
Well, that's where it's good in that, you know, we know by going to the Red Cross or UNICEF or that type of stuff, it's actually going to hit the people that are being affected. It's not going to wind up in, you know, some other government's pocketbook trying to rebuild the infrastructure or their great palace or this or that or, you know, corruption, which, let's face it, that's what a lot of Haiti, you know, that's why they are so poor, is because they're, most of it survives on corruption. And at least this money is going to relief and helping actual folks get
going. Every time there's a natural disaster somewhere, the scam artists jump out about it. And we've said in the past that a lot of the malicious things on the internet are not really, you know, the viruses. Viruses are dying off. Malware is sort of dying off a little bit. It's trying to trick users. You get a pop-up saying you've got a virus. Well, it's a fake message trying to trick you.
The most money that's being made off the internet right now is being made off of good people.
Yep.
People
good
who
intentions,
are, have good intentions and are willing to do nice things for other people and stuff like that. Also, gullibility. Can't deny that some of them are very gullible, but hey, we're up to 97 people on the audio stream.
Ooh.
Very nice.
Yeah, so it's a lot of likening it to the real world. You know, if you don't want to get mugged, don't go down dark alleys with $20 bills hanging out of your pocket.
Right.
Unless you know the shout.
You got another shout.
So same thing on the internet. Don't go to seedy places. You know, stick to legitimate, known websites.
And sometimes you can't help yourself. And that's why I say if you're
especially
going to do a lot of research on the internet.
Yeah, you could type in the wrong word and end up at a bad site. And then the music starts.
Really? Already?
Time goes by fast when you're having fun.
Holy mother of pearl. All right. Apparently, that's it. We're done for another week. I want to thank each and every one of you who called in, the five from New York and the five from not New York, the four from not New York, and the one from entirely another country. So we want to thank each and every one of you for calling in. For those of you who'd like to call in next week, please do so early and often, and we will be happy to take your calls. For Dave Enright, for Steve Ray, I'm Nick Francesco. Thanks for listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites, and we are here each and every week, and I'm delighted to say this, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Have a great week, and pay attention to where you're surfing, will you please, for heaven's sake? Thank you.
America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, the answer to your computer questions on member-supported Jazz 90.1.